The code is an attempt to close this process. It is an act of closure. That is, it attempts to tell us the final result. The commentary is to open the process, is to continue the discussion, is to not have any final word. We don't want the final determination. We are too much engaged in the process. And therefore, there's a very interesting dialectic or tension, creative tension, between the code on the one hand. Remember, Maimonides wanted to create the code, at least it is alleged, because he wanted people to spend more time studying philosophy. And that's why he wrote the Guides of the Perplexed. But not in the case of these guys. These guys simply want to study this rabbinic text. And therefore, farthest from their mind is the notion of a code. For them, what is important is the commentary, and a commentary upon a commentary. I should tell you, I learned the word supercommentary after I studied Rashi. Supercommentary usually means in the literature a commentary upon a commentary. We must have, and I'm just guessing now, we must have at least 500, maybe even more, supercommentaries on Rashi. In other words, commentators in later generations who wrote commentaries on Rashi's commentary. So you see, they don't want to stop. They just want to comment and comment and comment and comment. And that living Torah, so to speak, is really what is at is very much at the essence of describing an educational, a pedagogic, a cultural process within Judaism. Now, let us talk about another aspect of Rashi before our time runs out, and that has to do with his writing of rabbinical responsa. We came across that word when we talked about the Gaonim in Baghdad. And as you recall, at least until the 10th, 11th century, these scholars of Jewish law were the central figures within an institutional structure which responded to legal queries from Jews all over the world, including the Christian as well as the Muslim world. We see emerging very slowly, however, the authority of Rashi and his disciples and their writing of rabbinical responsa. They are quite aware of local custom, and they are also concerned about the practical aspects of Jewish law which are taking place in their era. So we have a long collection already of responsa, both by Rashi and by his disciples. Let me see, and just very, very quickly, to give you an example of a wonderful responsa written by Rashi. I will try to summarize the first part, just read you the end, because I'm going to run out of time. Two people come before Rashi. What is really extraordinary here is that we have both a male and a female voice, very unusual for the Middle Ages. Two people come before Rashi. The wife is complaining that her husband has wants to divorce her, and she's not treated well. The husband explains that I didn't know that she had a skin disease, and she's the signs of the disease are all over the place, and he just can't handle this. And therefore, since she wasn't honest when she first got married, she is damaged goods, so to speak, and I want a divorce. And she answers, and here's her voice speaking, you know, we have a woman's voice, which is, again, very unusual. It's not so, she answered. I was a hale and hearty woman when entering into marriage, and as for your saying that signs of a skin disease are visible on me, this is not so and never will be, for my whole body is of healthy condition. There were, however, two warts that had appeared on her face due to the suffering and vexation which she had experienced after her husband had driven her from her house. But concerning this, a number of members of the community who had known her, the husband, for many years and had heard nothing of the trouble testified, she was a healthy woman when she entered into marriage, and we have never noticed any sign signs of skin trouble. The following decision was given by Rashi in this dispute. First, let me extend my greetings to those who have directed this question to me, inasmuch as no physical defects were noticeable in this woman when she was in her father's house, and they have developed only since her marriage in her husband's house. He has therefore no claim against her on the ground that she was physically unfit. That man is conducting himself in a bad way and has shown that he is not acting like one of our father Abraham's children, whose nature it is to be kind to his fellow man, and particularly so to his own flesh with whom he has entered the covenant of marriage. If that husband had set his mind on keeping his wife as much as he had set his mind on getting rid of her, her charm would have grown on him. And I skip down. Similar is the charm exerted by a woman on her husband, and happy the man who has been fortunate enough to get such a wife and to acquire through her a share in life eternal. Even among those who deny God, we find many who do not reject their wives, and whose wives in turn act in like manner toward them, for they believe that the good they do serves as an expiatory sacrifice for the sins they have committed. But this fellow though a member of the household of our Father in heaven, has acted cruelly toward the wife of his youth, as God himself can testify.